Welcome to Sit for Speaks. On this month's episode, we are discussing the International Financial Reporting Standard 16, or IFRS 16. There's just over 1 month to go before this new accounting requirement on leases will be mandatory, notably from the 1st of April 2024. Now is the time to take stock of preparations. To help local authorities best prepare, we will be joined by David Ellis, who is a financial advisory network advisor at SIPFA, as he talks us through what the changes mean, what teams can be doing in preparation, along with the benefits of IFRS 16 and the resources that SIPFA has that may be useful for teams. So stay tuned. Hi David, and thank you for joining us today on Sit for Speaks. So you are a finance advisory network advisor at SIPFA, and we are going to be discussing the implementation of IFRS 16. To kick off, please could you tell our listeners a little bit about your role at SIPFA?
Thanks so much. Yes, I'm David, and I'm part of a team of three fan advisors. We're part of SIPFA Networks, and SIPFA Networks cover a range of technical disciplines, and we're there largely to support practitioners. Primarily in local authorities, but basically from an accounting perspective, anybody that accounts under the local authority accounting code. So it does include, for example, police bodies, fire authorities, a few national parks, etc. So our role as part of FAN is to help practitioners. We've all got a background in practitioners, so we've been there and worked in the sector for many years. We run training events, we support practitioners through workshops, as well as responding to people's technical queries. We've had a lot recently on today's topic, IFRS 16. We're also running a technical workshop next month on the 7th of March. All the technical details of IFRS 16 for anybody who wants to get to that level of detail.
That's brilliant. As we mentioned, from April 2024, local authorities will need to account for leases following the accounting code's implementation of IFRS 16 leases. So the new mandatory requirements will end different treatments based on whether they are finance leases or operating leases. Please, could you talk us through what these changes mean?
Of course, yeah. It's a real topical issue for practitioners. And for local authorities that lease in assets, they will need to recognise a lease asset referred to as a right of use asset and a liability on the balance sheet. In many respects, for those familiar with existing leasing standards, this is like finance lease accounting. So you refer to finance leases at the moment. There is that distinction between an operating lease and a finance lease. And a finance lease is basically recognised by reflecting an asset and a liability on the balance sheet. And that is essentially what will happen under IFRS 16, but it's going to apply pretty much to all leases unless they fall under one of two exemptions. To just briefly explain, the exemptions are for leases which are short term, typically less than a year long, or for leases where the asset is of low value. Now, low value is still a policy decision for authorities to take, but generally speaking, unless a lease is of a low value asset or for a short term, all leases will be on the face of the balance sheet for the lessee. In other words, if you're leasing in assets, generally you're going to be expecting to see an asset and a liability on balance sheet. Notably, in the public sector, there's also a broader definition of a lease as compared to the private sector application of the standard. So basically, a definition of a lease for local authorities will include any contract that contains the right to use an asset for a period of time, regardless of whether they're paying anything. And that's an important change. Obviously, in the commercial world, people will be paying for the use of an asset. But of course, in the public sector, you often have arrangements where you might be paying a notional sum or a peppercorn rent, or maybe nothing at all. And of course, you know, paying nothing at all doesn't necessarily mean that you haven't got a lease. So it's a broader definition. And that's something that would need to be factored into data collection to identify what you've got that might meet that broader definition. So fundamentally, I think IFRS 16, the biggest challenge isn't ironically about the accounting, it's actually about data collection and information management. So I think for many authorities, this is perhaps the more challenging aspect of the standard. And it's typically going to lead to more information being required to recognise leases that are currently not recognised on balance sheet. If you're leasing assets out and the authority is the lessor, it's not without change. where you've got subleases or where you've got leases that meet that nil consideration expanded definition, there will also be some considerations for lessors as well. So if you lease an asset in under a head lease and then you sublease it out again, there'll be some work to do to review the sublease out to make sure that it hasn't changed lease classification. So it's mainly a change for lessees where you're leasing assets in, but it doesn't mean to say there isn't some work to do also if you're leasing assets out.
Absolutely. And with just over 1 month to go before local authorities need to comply with these new accounting requirements on leases, what does SIPFA recommend that teams should be doing at this point in their preparations?
Timing is tight and new standard coming in not too far away. So I think fundamentally data collection side of things is the one thing authorities really need to sort of check to make sure everything's on track. Certainly from those who adopted the standard early, one of the big feedback things took longer than they expected to. So I think, you know, there's always a risk of perhaps underestimating the work involved in collecting data. In the broader context of wider definition of a lease, which will include arrangements where you're using an asset and not necessarily paying anything, it's important to try and capture that information across the organisation. Because if you're not paying anything, there's nothing going through your ledgers to spot that you've got something that might be in place. So this largely, I think, is the main focus point. Making sure you're comfortable that you've identified anything that potentially could be material if you missed it and if you didn't reflect it on the balance sheet. So I think the first thing is just to make sure that your data collection processes are working fine, that you're reviewing across the organization to identify whether you've got things that might look a bit like a lease, and then a case of evidencing your review of those arrangements to establish whether they need to be recognized on balance sheet or not. There are some other bits and pieces that go along with that. A lot of the changes to the standard is in relation to lessee accounting, the user of the asset. So there will be some changes required to accounting policies, for example, defining what a low value asset is. It's not specified in monetary terms in the standard or the code, so authorities would need to give some consideration to what a low value asset is in monetary terms for them in the context of materiality judgments, for example. There'll be other areas of accounting policies that will also need to be considered in order to then recognise leases on balance sheet for the first time at the 1st of April. But what I would say as well is that when you're recognising assets on balance sheet for the first time, that has implications for capital planning and prudential indicators. And many authorities would be approving their prudential indicators for 24-25 now, probably may well have already done that. However, if you're going to be recognising more leased assets on balance sheet, that has implications for the capital financing requirement. So practitioners would be minded to have a look to see what impact this is likely to have in terms of the balance sheet and then reflect those possibly through updates to their prudential indicators for 24-25. We would also recommend that perhaps at some point an engagement with the auditors would be a good thing to do. I appreciate there's significant challenges in the world of local audit at the moment. Nonetheless, I think it's important to, you know, have that conversation to understand where the auditors are going to be coming from in terms of the sort of evidence they're going to be looking for and degrees of assurance and reviewing progress to date. To help authorities prepare, we did include an indicative project plan within SIPFA's Bulletin 14, which was the bulletin produced for the closing of the 22-23 accounts. And that can be found on the SIPFA website under policy and guidance. And that bulletin sort of sets out some indicative dates and ultimately a really useful checklist for authorities to go through just to make sure that everything's on track.
That is a really useful tool. And I know that some public bodies have already adopted the new accounting standard. So on that note, do you have any lessons learnt to share following any feedback?
Yeah, certainly. As I said, in the commercial world, the standard's been in use for a few years now. Large parts of the UK public sector have adopted from 22-23, but some central government departments adopted earlier than that. So there were useful lessons to be learned. We've touched on one or two already. But I think one of the key things that came out of that one was going back to what I said about a logical data collection process. Given the fact that you've now got a broader definition of a lease, it's important to evidence your review across the organisation. Clearly, conversations with property people, estates, records to identify property leases, reviewing the ledger for potential rental payments that might indicate other leases, but also capturing across the organisation anything that meets that broader definition of a lease. Even if you're not paying anything, if you're using an asset under a contract, then the chances are it will need to be reviewed. So the key thing is to review and capture that information across the organisation. Also then to document your judgments and thought processes. This is going to be really important for conversations with auditors, of course, but equally for the assurance for your own sort of chief financial officer in terms of making sure you haven't missed anything that could be material. It's important that any judgments that you make and any thought processes are documented as you go through that sort of review of data for potential leases that might be recognised on balance sheet. One thing to highlight, I think, under the new standard is that the transition to the new standard does rely on judgments made under the existing leasing standard. So where you're using assets under existing contracts, it's important that those contracts are reviewed just to make sure you're comfortable that any decisions about whether that contract is or contains a lease, you can then rely on for transition. One of the big findings we found from those who adopted early was that there were lots of existing contracts that had never properly been reviewed for embedded leases, as they're often referred to. So it's important really just to make sure that you're comfortable that any existing contracts that contain the lease have been reviewed and you're comfortable you can rely on those judgments about whether they're a lease or not, because that will be part of the mandated transition to the new standard. What I would say, and as possibly a logical conclusion, is that this is going to require a collaborative piece of work. It's not something that finance people can do in isolation. Even if this is an accounting standard, what you tend to find in practice is that leases are the things that the different parts of the organisation do or get involved in. And often finance are at the wrong end of that discussion. So it's important really that you've got a collaborative approach with buy-in at the top to support the process. Appreciate that an accounting standard might not necessarily be top of everybody else's list across the organisation, but it's important that that joined up effort is made, because ultimately there'll be a range of people and disciplines across the organisation who will have an interest and a need to understand what IFRS 16 will bring. That will range from procurement people to property staff to anybody who's involved in negotiating or indeed using leased assets. So, you know, I think the important thing really is that this does require a collaborative effort across the organisation. It's not something that finance can do in isolation, even if it looks like an accounting issue only. It's not. It's far from it. Actually, the accounting is probably the most straightforward part of the standard. It's about data collection and understanding what you've got. Finally, I suppose, don't lose sight of the fact that this is actually around the new world of leases beyond that point. So don't neglect business as usual, particularly around the use of systems and how you manage data. So whilst increased data is likely to be required for transition to the new standard, think about what the data needs are going to be moving forward and just making sure your systems are actually, you know, suitable for the job. Obviously, SIPFA has its own product. We have our own asset register system called assetmanager.net, which is already IFRS 16 compliant. So for anybody who's using that, the functionality is all there to be able to sort of capture and maintain that information moving forward. Regardless of what people are using, if you're using your own systems or indeed sometimes Excel spreadsheets, just make sure you've given consideration to what this is going to mean moving forward beyond the transition date.
And while the adoption of IFRS 16 will mean a lot of work across the whole organisation, it will lead to an improvement in financial reporting accuracy. What are some of these benefits?
Yes, I mean, IFRS 16 was designed to increase transparency over the range of assets being used and were available to use for organisations via leases, and also to recognise the liabilities that are linked to the use of those assets as well. So in theory, IFRS 16 should encourage a more comprehensive record keeping on leases, should provide a more accurate measurement of those leases. One of the things with IFRS 16 is that there's a need to potentially remeasure or update the values in the balance sheet where you've got payments that are perhaps linked to indexes or indices or indeed to market rents, for example. So long-term property leases inevitably will likely be remeasured, providing updated information. What I will say is that decision makers should have better information to be able to judge whether, for example, to buy an asset or to rent an asset, for example. And in many respects, that greater transparency was very much the driver behind the standard in the first place. Lots of concerns at the time that the standard was being developed that the classification of a lease as an operating lease would basically mean that the arrangement was off balance sheet. So many leased assets were just missing from company balance sheet. You know, so you had airline companies with no planes on the balance sheet. You had high street retailers with no stores on the balance sheet because they were basically managed under operating lease arrangements, and therefore you only ever accounted for the sort of revenue transactions in terms of the lease payment. So this was very much around greater transparency and greater understanding of the assets being used. IFRS 16 was considered to be a far better standard to deal with leases than IAS 17, and ultimately local authorities are now catching up with the rest of the UK who follow IFRS standards in adopting the standard from 1st of April.
That's really useful. And I know we've talked about SIPFA's project timeline that is available, along with SIPFA's asset manager. Are there any other resources that SIPFA has that may be useful for teams?
We have just updated our guidance. We did issue some early guidance, referred to it as the early guide to IFRS 16, which was published at the tail end of 2019. And to be fair, it was very early guidance, because even in the commercial world, they were still in their first year of application of the standard at that point. That guidance has now been updated, and we've got a 2023 version on the SIPFA website. So those who have got publication subscriptions or just want access to it, the IFRS 16 guidance is now updated and on the website. That's a real practical set of guidance with lots of worked examples, etc. So it does sort of take you through all the technical aspects of the standard, but equally it gives you lots of worked examples and example disclosures, as well as sort of working through the mechanics. In addition to that, we've got the actual accounting requirements that will apply, and that's currently as an appendix, Appendix F to the 23-24 accounting code. That will, from 24-25, actually be embedded as part of the main code of practice. At the moment, it's still part of an appendix. But that appendix sets out, if you like, the future accounting requirements for authorities under IFRS 16. And as mentioned earlier, we are running a technical workshop building on some of the stuff that was covered in that IFRS 16 guidance for anybody who wants to understand a little bit more around some of the more technical aspects of the standard. In many respects, the standard itself is more around the data collection and systems than it is the debits and credits. However, it's important that anybody involved in the accounting for leases understands how the technical side works. And therefore, anybody who missed our previous full day workshop, which we ran in December, we're running another event on the 7th of March, if that's going to be of interest to anybody.
That's really great to know. Well, thank you very much for your time today, David, and for joining me on SIPFA Speaks.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
That was David Ellis, a financial advisory network advisor at SIPFA. That's all we've got time for on this month's episode. We'd like to say a huge thank you to David for joining us. Make sure to follow us on social media for more and to ensure that you never miss another episode. Previous episodes of SIPFA Speaks can be found on SIPFA's website or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We'll be back next month. Until then, goodbye.